Okay, this is March 16th going into March 17th, 2008. It's Bob Dobbs and Dave Worster beginning to talk. Anything you want to say first, Dave?
Well, lots of light around you.
Thank you.
All right, the sub-listings I wanted to indicate would be Cosmic Awareness, Cosmic Awareness, a quality or state of being, thought, thinking, neurological reaction, or neurolinguistic reaction, conditioned thought, modified behavior, attention to reaction and source of trigger, mind control, power of suggestion, most powerful first force on earth and possibly beyond, the control that controls control, first notion, first motion, only one move, Kitzelman, original thinkers, four steps of integration, referring to Haunted House, simultaneous shock of mind, emotion, and feeling. Instant integration. Kapila. Vedas. That tattvic tides. 25 indications. 500-year search by monks. Find where in the Vedas Kapila found the tantric tides, question mark. Those monks collectively called themselves Krishna. Now, I think that's essentially as far as I got on those sub notes. There may be at a later point to some, but this is enough to get going, get started. Can you, did you make note of those as we went, Bob?
Yes, David, and did you write that down an hour before we got on the phone?
No, I wrote it probably 4 or 5 months ago when we talked about something earlier. And I thought I would probably have this, you know, and I knew we were going to talk.
Yeah.
Or we were going to have an article. And so I thought, well, see, my problem is that when I write, if I'm doing writing, it's not the same as when I'm talking. I write like a like someone writing a thesis for a PhD on, you know, that it's very, I tend to be very filtered, correct, and all the rest of it. And it, sometimes the writing seems outstanding as writing, but it's not the way I talk. When you hear me talk, I don't that way. And flow is completely different. So that's why I was sort of perturbed about whether I wanted to do the project at all, because I didn't want to do that kind of writing, because it it's not the kind of communication you probably want.
Okay, that's fine. What I often mention when I'm discussing the work you did with Cosmic Awareness is the interesting statement that in January 1967, when Ralph Doobie, the original medium for Cosmic Awareness, passed away in Hawaii, that, and I don't know if Doobie said this, but I assume it was said by you or by Cosmic Awareness after Doobie died and you took over 8 months later in 1967, somewhere the statement was made that Rai, the original separateness, maybe the original motion that you referred to in your notes, had passed back into the plane of essence.
Yes.
And let's get on tape for the record what you meant. And first off, did awareness say that through you?
I know that I was aware of the process. You see, when Doobie actually died, when Dr. Doobie actually died, we didn't know about the literal facts of it, but I had been going through an incredible turmoil that I felt was akin to a sort of mental illness. And so I stayed at the home of Vern H. Christensen's mother and sister. And they took care of me. I just stayed in a room and did nothing. They'd give me some food and so on, but it's like I was in withdrawal from everybody for quite some time. I know there was one two-week period where I didn't communicate with anybody. And eventually, I found that the way the facts worked out, that a lot of changes and motivations and all kinds of other things of a fairly high level were churning through several groups of people, including people in Seattle and Olympia and Honolulu, where Doobie had moved somewhere in there. I knew he was going to Hawaii, but I didn't know when. I think he left and went to Hawaii at a much later date than originally planned.
But it was sometime in 66, though, right?
That he left, but I don't know. That data can be worked up if it's ever important. But
when you say left, you mean when he went to Hawaii?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he died on pretty close to his birthday. It was early January. I want to say January the 7th, but I don't know. I forgot when his birthday was, but he had had a, according to what I later heard, a vision or a dream where an angel pointed to a clock, and so he felt that he was being given time, but it was not an indication that he was being given time. It indicated that the time was up. Now, to Rai, I think we better clarify who, what Rai is.
Yeah, just before that, when you're talking about this period where you were cared for by others, is that around January 67? It turned out to be around the time that you found out later Doobie passed over.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was around the holidays of 66.
Yeah.
Earlier. Yeah.
Okay.
I'd been down in Southern California and seen Krishnamurti and come back. I think Krishnamurti was there at Ojai in October, and I think
Yeah, now that...
It was very, it's like you might call a dark night of the soul.
Yes, now Dave, I know you might be a little hard for you to hear me, but that's the way the situation is. Is that I know that that is where you got to ask the pointed question to Krishnamurti at that public gathering. You asked him, are you asking us to speak to experience violence? That was your question. And it's actually one of the documentaries of Krishnamurti has a shot of the crowd in that lecture or group gathering, and you can see yourself in the crowd, right?
Yeah, and I can see David Millett. I can see there's quite a few movie stars and producers and stuff that are all in the same suite.
Right, but yeah. It's Krishnamurti's answer that was, I don't know if it's a mind blower for you, but it was very intense for you.
Yes, because of the way in which 3,000 people's attention swivels from him to me, and he just let it set there for a long period of time, and then he did something that I hadn't seen him do much, but he took his hand out and he just pulled, it was like he pulled his hand back toward himself, and when he did, he pulled the attention right back to him.
Yeah.
And he also did something that was rare, was putting his hand up alongside of his face and holding it for a while and saying, perhaps.
That was his answer.
All those were like unique little differences that were involved in consciousness at that particular time.
The question being, the question was, just for the audience hearing this, are you, Krishnamurti, asking us to experience violence? I think that's what the question was you presented to
him. Yeah. Krishnamurti was always talking about the process of experiencing. Before I asked the question, since he was talking about violence, he couldn't make headway. He'd get so far along, and then somebody would interrupt, which was unusual, for people to just say, well, why don't you think this way, you know? And so he would travel along the road they were saying, or say no, and then everybody obviously was wondering, what do I do? And that's when I got the flash to ask this question this way. Are you asking me, I used the word me, so that everybody in the place could identify with me, their own me.
Yes.
Are you asking me to look deep within myself to see whether I can find the source of violence? And that's when that moment happened.
Yeah.
Where everybody, I think what they were thinking is, who's asking this buster of a question? And then he lets that set there, and then it's like a mesmeric pass that he just sweeps out and pulls it right back to him, and then does this little performance of perhaps, which I think I told you, I know I've told others, is that the rest of the talk, it's like I went into another state, and it wasn't until I think that night when I was in my room that I revisited what had happened and sort of heard the rest of the lecture. And there was, his spirit was in the room. There was something very powerful. It was right there in the room. It was like a clear apparition. But I was going to be talking about this particularly. Thank you for bringing it up, though.
Yeah, no, it's a great story. It's a great story. I just wanted to say that you had been experiencing Krishnamurti in talk format for years up to that point.
Well, pretty much.
Yeah. You were familiar with his rap, you know.
Yes, my first reading of any of his was at the Center of Integration. But it was after I'd had quite an experience, and Bob Carr said, just a minute, and gave me these two books, and he said, just so you don't think you're unique. Well, as it happened, I had been writing some things in that previous days, and I looked at these books, and it was the same kind of thing that I was writing, almost word in some cases. So it's like I was channeling Krishnamurti before I even read any of his books at that point.
Now, that's 1956, and we've done a two-hour or so interview dialogue. We did it in 88 in the fall, so this is almost 20 years later. That we don't need to go back to that history. We're kind of moving where we didn't get maybe 20 years ago. So let's go into what Rai is, or how would you talk about it?
All right. A period where a number of our ministers went to Europe, I think 17 people went to Europe, to check out and verify many messages that had been given to many people that correlated so much to each other that it was like reading the like an ancient novel and all of its characters and all the events, and a bunch of people went over there and virtually relived past lives in some of the places and so on. Anyway, it was quite profound effect on some of them.
And Ralph Doobie was the guide in that trip?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did they have sessions, a channeling of cosmic awareness in Europe?
I think they did, but I wasn't there.
Right.
So I don't know. I know that that there was all kinds of phenomena that did occur for all of them anyway, whether it's almost as though it tuned them all up. And strangely enough, instead of them all coming back in mass into a big plume of action in the organization, about all of them just split and went their own ways silently.
And that would include Ruth Ferris?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And,
so why do you bring up that in relation to Rai? I know about the Lisbon earthquake, 1755.
Yes.
Voltaire writes about a lot of them had been in that earthquake. That's what they re-experienced, right?
Yes, that's right. I was one of them that was, according to my reading, affected. But anyway, the Rai bit, let me think for a minute. I'm not telling you to shut anything down. I'm just going to... one of the people who came back from this trip, there was a couple that went, and one of them was having a lot of recalls and was having a fairly upsetting time about the whole thing. So she wanted to have a reading from me. And I think this may have been a rare thing for me to do at the time.
Doobie was still alive.
I think so.
Or gone to Hawaii, maybe.
I don't think he'd gone to Hawaii yet. But
right.
There was this thing where I wasn't seeing much of the people in the organization because I had felt that he'd made a move for power, for it, which was different from what had been going on before. And there's a long, drawn-out mishmash on all that, which I don't think is particularly interesting. But at any rate, in this reading for this woman, whose name I forgot now, I saw the beginning well, the beginning, from the beginning and the Big Bang and the other things that happened, and then the manifestation of Rai as a principle, and then Rai as an escapee, so to speak, and Isis entering into the dimension that Rai had escaped into, and that it was the dimension of man, and that between Rai and Isis, that the manifestation of things and people and so on, and this dimension was a partnership, and at some point Rai became aware and made the decision to not continue the process, but to look at the dimension into which he had moved. And so as soon as he had completed that observation, he left. And the leaving of it was coincidental with the death of Ralph Doeby. Now, that doesn't mean that Ralph Doeby was Rai, although at some aspects of his being, he did have qualities that were similar, because of he was a Capricorn, he was a control freak in a certain sense, before all this happened. And in order to channel cosmic awareness, he had to surrender that. And for a long time, that was the case. But then when he decided to, shall we say, take over the reins, that's when I left. I didn't know everything about it, but I knew that the nature of the trance had changed. Instead of it being a free, open channel, it was Ralph Doeby was coming in and introducing, like, even people's names in this lifetime as authority figures, because they had lots of money and etc. He wanted to manipulate them and to acquire this, that, the other. So I said, no, I won't do that. And in the meantime, I'd had this trance with this woman, and see, Rai, I've described it as though he had a blue robe, and around the bottom of the robe was like scallops, except they were kind of like drapings, and he wore a beehive hat that was blue, the Rai.
That was, that he was a human being, a human image.
Well, it was like I could see that much, you know, like it was like a cartoon of a human being, but it was of a kind of a human form. Now, whether I, personally, my feeling is that that part manifested after Rai moved into the dimension of man.
Right.
It's like the beginning. In the beginning, shall we say, there was nothing. What we might call dark energy now. Dark energy, you must remember, is like gravitational waves. Maybe something more than that, but I mean, as you go into dark energy, the thing is basically made up of gravitational waves, and as far as my readings and my calibrations and the things that I've come across, the gravitation waves that are 16 times the speed of light. So that when something gravitational occurs out there, we don't even know it until it's already hit us, because we can't see that fast, and therefore it's called dark. course, the dark energy gives up to a lesser vibe, which would be dark matter. And that dark matter occupies a huge amount of the energy of the universe. That the amount of energy that our entire universes and galaxies and worlds, etc., comprise, probably less than 1% of all the energy there is. We think it's incredible, but it's only tiny. And of course, our science is operated through thought. And we know that thought only operates within about the first million vibes, a million vibrations per second. You get beyond that, you're beyond thought. And the human organism is capable of functioning in form up to about once every 4 quadrillionths of a second. And the void that Buddha experienced lasts for 1/4 quadrillionth of a second, and then it repeats. Anything that hasn't been processed in the previous 1/4 quadrillionth of a second is reiterated into carnation. And then it accelerates up to the speed of light. And when it goes beyond the speed of light, it starts to disappear to us because we can't see it. It's too fast. And it keeps getting... You move into consciousness to higher and higher levels, and it just gets brighter and brighter and brighter. It isn't, but it's invisible to anybody else. The point of cosmic awareness is how can one be aware in that state? And it's simply by being capable of surrendering to an increasing degree past the speed of light and still be able to perceive and to see. We know thinking can occur, but perception can occur. And then beyond that kind of perception is awareness, which is beyond belief. It's its own stuff in which everything rests. In other words, all the galaxies and all the universes and all the time, space, and energy constructs may exist in consciousness, may exist in perception, but when it comes to awareness, they rest in that, that it is before all of that. Some people would say, well, then does awareness equate to dark energy? Well, maybe even that rests in God. That's beyond our parlance. The only way in which I have been able to deal with it was to be still and know, and revelations occur, and most of those revelations are not additions, but peeling off. One of the analogies I make is if I am relating to you and you are relating to me and we're truly relating, that between us is like this column of light that goes up and down, that's so brilliant, And if we relate to each other, anything that we put out toward each other actually goes into that light and spins and swallows up. So we're actually decreased in context rather than increased. So in a sense, it's an awful thing to even ask anyone to become aware, because that is their fate. And the thing is, if they know they're moving toward awareness, they discover those things, and it's not a problem. They don't mind losing their mind. Well, anyway, this Rai business would have to do with the timing of Doobie's death. But furthermore, it would probably mean an acquiescence, a participation that actually carried Rai out. You know what I mean? That it must have been a participatory action. But that's just my own conjecture.
Right. Does it involve ISIS?
It does involve both parts, because it's male and female. Rai is the supreme male principle, Isis is the supreme female. But the cosmic joke is that the first separateness was Rai, that all was one massive unified force field, but this one aspect that had been given the quality of the priest judge was the thing that created a being that was to stop any nonsense that was occurring up to that point. And when all the nonsense was stopped and there was nothing to do, and Rai says, well, I wonder what would happen if I would take this aspect, which is already in the state of perfect annihilation, and place it on the green stone and annihilate it, which would be like a double annihilation, which would absolutely be the next paradox which created dimensions. And we don't know whether that's happened once or not, but the ones that we know about is the creation of dimensions. Man. And then when Rai was going to be placed on the green stone for annihilation, he smashed the green stone, took part of it into the dimension of man, and has been operating ever since. Now, as Rai becomes self-aware and returns to essence, it will leave this area clear of his force. If it leaves the dimension clear of Rai, then it automatically releases ISIS from this area, because the little blip that was Rai was the first separateness. And Isis came in as the rest of consciousness. So all the time, Rai's a little blip and Isis is everything else. So everything in the universe is Isis. But when you take Rai out of it, that's when the Isis we know comes into being. You understand that Isis is totally massive. Rai is insignificant. And so, but the decision of return for Rai to essence is to return to the massiveness of everything with Isis.
And you say then that's when Isis appears, you mean as a form?
No, Isis returns too. They return together. They're not separated.
Oh, so the appearance of ISIS is to accompany Ra'i into the disappearance.
Into the dimension of man. Now, essentially, the male and the female principle happened because Ra'i has to create with ISIS because he can't do it alone, which is, has to do with progeny. Well, when Ra'i no longer has any progeny, and ISIS has no need to help with that, neither of them need to be in the dimension of man, but back to their original state. Now, what does that do? Since the dimension of man was created, I think the last vestiges of Ra'i in this dimension is finding out what is the dimension of man. And that's what you and I and those of us who are in this dimension are looking into also. And my theory is nobody knows that it's been filled up with Ra'i and ISIS. And when it's no longer filled up with Ra'i and ISIS, then what is the dimension of man?
Yeah.
And of course, you could probably look into the whole Mother Mary, Jesus trip on that oracle, and there's probably many other symbolic structures that you could look into. That if I think the Buddha was probably as close to anybody in the sense of getting rid of the nonsense of going into the void and encouraging people to get off the wheel, you know.
That's nonsense? To get off the wheel? Is that what you meant?
No, it's the whole point. Yeah, and of course, then of course there's the great Bodhisattvas who says, well, I won't get off the wheel until I can take everybody with me.
I think of two things. I remember awareness saying, cosmic awareness, I don't know if it came through you or Ralph Dubey, but awareness said that after 67, after Ra'i returned to essence, or maybe it didn't relate it to that, but that what was coming in the late 60s was the closing of the womb. Remember that idea or that message?
Yes. I think that the principles of male, female are profoundly affected. We know that with the advent of an extraordinary amount of abortions all over the world.
Yeah.
For instance, China would be one-third larger in population if they hadn't done it. And then, of course, we have the many problems with fertility and et cetera in this country. I mean, there's a huge amount of people want to have children and don't seem to have it except without extraordinary measures. But then there's an awful lot of them that just say, I don't want children. And for myself, I think I decided when I was about 11 or 12 years old that I wasn't going to have any children.
And right now. When you said, you know, 10 minutes ago that Ra'i and ISIS left, there was no more role for them in creating progeny, that's in 67, and then you have the consequences of that, right? Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, yes. And I think the apex of polarity that occurred at a later point, I mean, is symbolic. I mean, just look at the phrase, the concept of polarity and the highest point of its manifestation and the change that occurred. spiritual and, well, I don't want to say magical, but I mean the different areas of consciousness that entailed preparation that created certain so-called magic, all went through such an extraordinary change.
Hello, Bob. Are you there?